At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about multicolored spells in CEDH. All the best ones, all the ones that are playable, all of the multicolored spells in CEDH. I'm excited.
Me too. We're not going to be talking about commanders today, because this whole list hasn't been about commanders since we started this series here. So it's going to be a little bit of a smaller list than we've been talking about in the previous colors. But before we get into anything, if you want to support us directly, check out our Patreon in the description below.
Multicolored spells. Not a lot of decks get to play a ton of them, but a couple decks get to play a few of them. What's the first one we starting with? How are we organizing these?
All right, well, I think we should talk about some cards that we referenced in the green ranking podcast,
okay,
but didn't actually get to rank because we then determined that they were multicolor spells.
Perfect. All right, yeah, let's start with that.
Yeah, let's just revisit them. So our first one then is Avacyn's Pilgrim.
Yeah, this is a multicolored spell when it comes to CDH, when it comes to Commander, because we're going to talk about not only cards that have multiple colors, but cards that have multiple color identities.
Right, because even though this is a green card, it has a Selesnya colored identity because it's a green mana for a 1/1 human monk that taps for a white mana.
Right, so for a Commander, this might as well be as a Selesnya card because you can only play it in both green and white decks. Avacyn's Pilgrim is great. It's seen a lot less play recently as mana dorks have seen a little bit of a decline, but I still think it's a powerful card. It helps you specifically fix your mana because if you have the green for the Pilgrim, that means that it also adds an additional color, the white. So it's good in that aspect, but the one toughness and it's being a little bit slow, those are the things that kind of hold this card back.
Yeah, so everything that we said about Llanowar Elves, Flinthorn Elf, and Mystical Elf all applies to this card as well. Too. This is just a little bit better because of the mana fixing that it gives you.
Right, yeah. What did we give Llanowar Elves? Low, right?
So we gave them 2.5.
Okay, so this is probably
where they're at in the meta.
This is probably just barely better than that, maybe like 2.7 or something, I would say.
And that's probably, yeah, I would say 2.7. I was going to say that maybe that's actually just like a little bit generous.
This card also, in the next 6 months to a year, I imagine this card's going to see even less play. I think it's going to be taken out of even more decks. I think as we get more ramp, as we get more mana, this is going to be one of the first cuts for other cards. So this card probably, we're on its last hurrah, I want to say. I think the last few decks that are playing it are probably going to start cutting it soon.
This document is working completely differently.
What do you mean?
I was trying to type in stuff and it was giving me a note. I can't describe it and it doesn't make any sense. Just know that I'm not losing my mind.
Okay.
And I fixed it.
That sounds exactly like what people who are losing their minds say.
The next episode, I'm going to be in a straight jacket the whole time.
Before we get started, I want to let you know that I'm not losing my mind.
We're not crazy.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Elves of Deep Shadow. Keep this train running. This is a green mana for a 1/1 elf druid that taps for a black mana, but it says that it also deals you one damage when you do so.
Exact same thing that we said for Avacyn's Pilgrim. I think there's probably 2.6 because you lose a life.
Actually, I was going to give it a 2.8
because black is better.
Black is just better, and it kind of doesn't matter that you're losing life unless you're playing ad nauseum, but black is just a better color.
Yeah, that could make sense. Let's even it out. It's still a 2.7. You lose a life, but it's a better color.
All right, I think that's fair. We'll keep it at a 2.7 in that case then. Then our next card's going to be Noble Hierarch. This is a green mana for a 0/1 human druid that has exalted and taps for a green, a white, or a blue.
The exalted doesn't matter quite as much in our format, but it tapping for a blue is huge. And the fact that it's three different colors is also really big. So in 3 to 5 color decks, I think that can play Noble Hierarch. This is one of the last few remaining dorks that I want to play.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of decks that have the luxury of being able to play it anymore because this color combination kind of fell out when Thrasios Timna stopped being like the biggest thing. But do you still play it in Atraxa?
It's on the chopping block. I do play it in Atraxa still. I think I'm shaving as Avacyn's Pilgrim as we speak from Atraxa. So still Noble Hierarch is there. The fixing mana is huge. It makes a big difference, I think. It makes the one toughness much more manageable. I don't know if that's the right word, but like you're willing that it can sometimes die for the trade-off of that it can fix your mana in a couple of different ways. I think that's Very relevant.
We still gave Birds of Paradise a 5 because it's still so powerful being able to tap for any color of mana. And this taps for 3/5 of the color pie and a primary color that you want to in blue.
Right, yeah.
So I do think that it's still important. It is going to be better than all these other cards we've talked about, these other dorks that we talked about, but I think 3 is probably the limit that I would go with this one.
Yeah, it depends, because a lot of times this is going to be very, very close, if not the same thing as Birds of Paradise. I want to say it's a little bit higher than a 3, but I can see what you're saying.
I guess that's true. In Atraxa, it basically is Birds of Paradise.
Yeah, I mean,
but like the 5-color decks, like you will feel it sometimes not being able to tap for black or red.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think it's 3 is a fine card. I think 3 is fine for this one. It's still a good card. If you can play Noble Hierarch, I think you probably still should, but it's probably one of the lower powered cards you have options to.
Now we're going to talk about the complete inverse of that card then, which is Ignoble Hierarch, which is the same thing, except it has Exalted and taps for a black, red, or green, the Jund one.
Yeah, I think this is probably better, right? In our format, just Jund colors are better than Bant colors.
Yeah.
Is that true, though? I don't know. Blue and white have gotten a lot better, but the red and green is also huge.
I don't know. For some reason, I feel like these Jund decks want these mana dorks more than the Bant and non-red-based green decks want them, right?
I think black wants creature bodies more than blue or white does. Black can use Diabolic Intent. Black can use rituals that can sacrifice for mana. Black can use the body a little bit better than maybe Ban can.
Yeah, because like in the Rograkh based Jund decks, like when we built that deck for the channel, this is totally something that you actively want, because everything that Rograkh can sacrifice to, this will as well. So even like your Phyrexian Towers too, it's helpful that this now is like 3 mana basically for that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just barely better than Noble Hierarch, but they're basically the same card. Maybe it's a 3.1.
It could even be like a 3.01,
sure,
as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because tapping for blue is also very huge on the Noble Hierarch side of things, so they're very close. It's very similar to Avern's Pilgrim, Elves of Deep Shadow, I think. There's some a little bit worse, a little bit better. Kind of just depends on what deck you're playing and what the metagame looks like. They're basically the same, though.
Yeah. All right, and then the next one is the 1-mana Planeswalker, Deathrite Shaman. So this is a Golgari hybrid mana for an elf shaman that's a 1/2. So you tap it to exile a target land from a graveyard and make 1 mana of any color. For a black and tapping it, you exile target instant or sorcery from a graveyard and have each opponent lose 2 life. And then for a green and tapping it, you can exile a creature card from a graveyard to gain 2 life.
It's important to remember, I mean, we all know Deathrite Shaman, this has been a classic staple of the format forever, but it's important to remember that even that top ability is not a mana ability, which means it can be responded to. So if you try to exile a land out of someone's graveyard and they endurance it in response or do something like that, that will stop your mana from being activated. That's pretty relevant. And in CDH, weirdly enough, Deathrite Shaman is probably not as strong as it is in some other formats because fetch lands aren't as popular. They are popular. Every deck plays a bunch, but every deck also plays a bunch of 5-color lands. Every deck also plays a bunch to other lands that are not fetch lands. When it comes to the amount of fetch lands per lands, fetch lands make up a smaller portion of the total lands than in 60 card, where fetch lands are most of your lands. So that the death rate, there are times where it's not a mana dork, but it being able to also stop Underworld Breach lines sometimes or interact with the graveyard, stop Birthing Pod lines, be also a very important interactive piece that can be cast off of a blue-black source, like a Watery Grave or something like that. I think that makes Deathrite Shaman still very powerful in our format.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the fact that it is still graveyard interaction too is nothing to snuff at. People do get Savine's Reclamations and Brain Freezes into their graveyard, so having something that can just snipe those really important pieces, I think is super huge. To me, this is still a 5.
Yeah.
Because in all of the Golgari decks that I'm playing, I'm playing this. This is like the only mana dork that I'm actually playing in Kenrith because its 2-butt is really relevant in the Orcish Bowmaster and just like little pings worlds that you get yourself into. Even though fetch lands are typically probably 10% of the lands that are in the graveyard at any given time, given that the maximum any deck can play is 10. Like you said, it's not going to be as prominent as in our 60 card decks, but I think that's still pretty frequent enough that it's pretty reliable as a mana dork.
Yeah, like you said, like the fact that it also does other stuff, like the graveyard interaction, makes it so much stronger. If it was just that mana dork portion of it, I don't think Deathrite would be nearly as powerful, but the fact that it also nicely interacts with the graveyard makes it, yeah, I don't know, a 5... Yeah, I think you're probably right. In the decks that can play it, I'm not cutting it, I think. In the decks that are playing both black and green, I'm not cutting it, and that normally makes a 5. I can't really think of a deck that would be playing those colors and wouldn't want to play it. Even the ones where it doesn't synergize well with the rest of what your deck is doing, it's still fine. It does still so many things that, yeah, I think you're probably right. It's a 5.
Yeah, I think it's still a really important piece in those decks, and it's like, it's only... if like you're playing one or the other of those colors, that maybe you wouldn't actually want it in those decks. But because of the way it overlaps, I think it's just a five. Neoform is a green and a blue for a sorcery that says as an additional cost to cast a spell, you sacrifice a creature. And you can search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the sacrificed creature's converted mana cost. Put that card onto the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. I always forget that line.
Yeah.
And then shuffle.
Yeah, Neoform's great. Sees a little bit less play recently, but I really like this card if you are in Thassa's Oracle color combinations and you're also playing Mana Dork. So you have to kind of be playing Sultai for this card to really be shining at its best, because if you can get rid of one of your Avacyn's Pilgrims or something like that, one of your Mana Dorks, to put it into a Thassa's Oracle and then you have the Tainted Pact in your hand, you kind of have more ways to get to your Thoracle combo. And the fact that it can also just as easily get Grand Abolisher when your opponents maybe think that you're getting Thassa's Oracle and instead you sneak out some really great protection is super great with this card.
It's also really good if you're in Sands Black and want to get like Dockside Extortionist. Yep. It's just, again, on that same playing field. Those same decks might really want to get Seedborn Muse, and a lot of times Brews or like another 4-mana like Tana kind of commander. Maybe not Tana. Maybe that doesn't come up so often. Malcolm Tana, I fixed it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you want to go get like a 5-drop or something too. So there's actually a lot of really cool things you can do with like your commander and these other decks that you can build around Neoform to have it be really good in your deck.
Yeah, it's definitely great, like you said, if you can have a commander that you can turn your commander into another kind of secret commander of your deck, like a Seedborn Muse or something like that. The only reason why this doesn't see quite as much play is it's just not in Grixis. It's not in that same strategy. Green doesn't see quite as much play for the same reason. But in the decks that can play Neoform, I really like it a lot.
Sultai fell off. Kenrith, my Kenrith list doesn't play it. I tried it for a little bit, but I'm just not running enough mana dorks for it. Like, your deck literally has to be built a such a specific way for this to work. In the decks that it works, it's a 5.
Right.
But in the reality of it now, it's probably more like a 3-3.5, somewhere around there.
The main issue is the strategy that's in is, you, like you said, you do kind of have to be in mana dork heavy strategy. It's best when you always have another little creature that you don't quite care as much anymore. If you're in this like mid-rangey late game, all of your creatures are super relevant and powerful, like, you don't want to be sacrificing your Dranith Magistrate to go get another value piece or something. You need that. But in these like mana dork decks where you don't really need your creatures quite as much, it's much better.
And it has the same drawback as Eldritch Evolution of opening yourself up to 2-for-1s if it gets countered, while also not having the same flexibility of Eldritch Evolution, because you have to get something that costs one more. There's no range of or less.
Yeah, Eldritch Evolution can get 2 or less, so it can get a whole bunch of different stuff. You can sacrifice your big thing to make your opponents think that you're getting something bigger than you're not, whereas this, your opponents know that if you sack a 1-drop, you're getting a 2-drop. It can only be a couple of different things.
So there's a lot of small nuances that make this card significantly worse than Eldritch Evolution, but what are you giving it?
I still think it's powerful. Probably not a 4, though. I think it's probably like a 3.5 or something.
It sounds like that's where we're landing, is a 3.5 for this. We're certainly past its heyday. Now, I guess not to say that it can't come back, but it would take a lot, I think, for it to come back.
Orcish Bowmaster is another just a big push against it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point.
It pushes
against
that strategy a lot. But it's still a powerful card. If you're playing blue-green, then I think you're probably considering it, but...
Do you want to hear another card that Orcish Bowmaster kind of pushed out of the meta?
Let's hear it.
Notion Thief.
Yes. Although I'm not sure if that's 100% correct, but yeah, Notion Thief, powerful.
Notion Thief. This is 2, a blue and a black for a 3/1 human rogue with flash. And it says if an opponent will draw a card except for the first card that they draw during each of their draw steps, instead that player skips that draw and you draw a card.
The reason why this is a little bit bad into the Orcish Bowmaster, obviously, is that one toughness. That makes a huge difference.
Oh, yeah, it's a 3-1, yeah.
Yeah, but still, I still think Notion Thief does so much. Like, they're not always going to have Orcish Bowmaster, and although this is 4-mana investment, this can really change the tides of a game.
I mean, even we just saw in the video with Kyle Hill how Nate used this even into an Orcish Bowmaster and still was 4-mana, draw 4 cards and like negate away one of the damage.
I still think that can be totally fine, especially in a one ring world. Like, that can be totally fine.
Yeah. So like, even in that case, I think that's still great. We're in huge Ristic Study metas. I totally get why you would want something like this. It's just going to draw you so many cards.
Yeah. And with the Wheel of Fortune, that's basically a win. Like, if you can resolve a Notion Thief and keep it alive through a resolved Wheel of Fortune, your opponents discard all of their hands, you draw 28 cards, that's going to be a difficult game for you to lose, unless you're like literally dead on board from something right in front of you, and even then you should be able to win on the spot with most decks. I think that makes it good, but It is a fear. There's other things at that slot that you really want to play. There's not many four drops that you can realistically play in a commander deck. A lot of decks are playing Talion instead, just because having a more protected, bigger toughness creature that can draw cards slowly over the course of the game is a little bit better than Ocean Thief. Or maybe you're playing Emile because you want to combo with Docksider. There's a whole bunch of other four drops that it competes with, and I think that's the real thing that holds it back. But still a very powerful card, a little bit less than Neoform, I want to say. I want to say these days it's a little bit not quite as strong. I don't know.
I was actually going to give it a four.
You're going
to
give a four.
I think your argument had actually convinced me to go higher than I was going to go.
Okay, yeah.
So I was thinking a little bit more than that it should be a four as opposed to maybe how much play it's seen. But if we do want to go based on how much play it's seen, maybe it is less than a four.
I want to say it's around the same as Neoform because it gets stopped by a lot of similar things with the Orcish Bowmaster.
Yeah.
But it's competition with Talion, I think, is huge. Whereas like Neoform works really well alongside Eldritch Evolution. It's competition. You want more of that effect. When it comes to Ocean Thief, the four mana is a big difference than two mana.
Let's give it a 3.4 then.
Okay.
What about that? Yeah.
It's just under the Neoform.
Just under the Neoform. Still a super powerful effect and can, you know, really put you in a lot of game winning situations, but just not as popular as it used to be.
And you got to realistically, you have to be playing Wheels alongside Ocean Thief. I think it has to act as both a win condition and a disruptive piece in order for it to see play in your deck.
So it really is part of a package.
Right.
Like, it's not just something that you slot in. It's like a value engine,
right,
per se.
And Wheel of Fortune is just a little bit less powerful. Nowadays, in the early stages of CDH, a lot of players were trying to hoard their cards and sculpt a perfect seven over the course of the game. So wheeling that all away did a lot of work. Whereas now, a lot of players are just going to be able to win off of a fresh seven with the amount of mana that they have in play, they'll just win from there. So wheeling is a lot more risky now.
Actively bad half the time. Yeah, so all right, I like that. Speaking of Talion, though, we should talk about Talion, because even though this is a commander, this is seeing a decent amount of play in the 99 as well. This is 2 and a blue and a black for a 3/4 flying legendary fairy noble. It says, when it enters the battlefield, you choose a number between 1 and 10, and whenever an opponent casts a spell with mana value, power, or toughness equal to the chosen number, that player loses 2 life and you draw a card.
This one I've been liking a lot. I've been playing it in Atraxa, and I think it's great. I'm playing it over Ocean Thief a lot, kind of like what I was just saying.
Yeah, and it's also really good against decks that want to be looping things for a win condition. I'm finding that Talion on 2 stops food chain loops in Itali because power and toughness being attached to its ability makes this thing so much better than it initially reads.
Yeah, it's not just a draw engine. It is also a combo stopper in a lot of ways. It's going to stop people from going through their loops. Whether you name 1 or 2, I'm never really sure. I think most of the community has decided 2 is most often the best thing to name. Stops a lot of win conditions and stops a lot of removal, which is the main thing that you want against Talion. It stops the, I don't want to say stop, but it gives you cards for, you know what I mean? All the Assassin's Trophy that are coming at your Talion. Maybe you'll draw interaction to stop the removal that's coming at it.
Hits a lot of good creatures too, because if those creatures aren't 2 CMC, they probably have 2 power or toughness too. So it really hits such a wide swath of the format when you hit 2. The only times that I would really like to hit 1 is like if I know that a player has a 1 drop in hand, like I see that they tutored for Esper Sentinel or something, and like I know that it's gonna hit me at least 1 draw. But other than that, I don't know. I really like 2. I think Talion is way better than a 2, though. I think Talion's gonna be closer to a 4
at this point. I think that's probably true, too. I think it being just another Rhystic Study, another engine, another thing at a different mana value, so that no matter what, if you're looking for a 2 drop, a 3 drop, a 4 drop, now our format can kind of support you finding Archivist of Ogma or Rhystic Study or Talion or whichever one can fit your curve. So I think that's really helpful, and I've been liking Talion a lot. I think it's probably like a solid 4.
I think so too. I think its mana cost is the only thing really holding it back. Like, I think what Ocean Thief does for that same mana cost has a little bit more of a ceiling just because of like how explosive it can be and how you can catch people with their pants down with the flash ability. And sometimes Talion is going to come in name 2 and then someone's going to have something stupid like a fetch land and a fatal push and you're not going to get anything off of it. And I guess that can happen with Ocean Thief, but at least you can, like, again, the surprise factor helps you control that a little bit more.
Yeah, Ocean Thief can act as like a spell where like if they get rid of it afterwards, it doesn't matter. It did its one thing. It already swiped something. someone's five cards or something like that. But I think just the more, I don't know if the word is just like security in Talion. That's like the long-term value over the course of many terms. That's where a lot of CDH decks want to live right now in that mid-range world, and Talion's a little bit better there. If we go closer towards Turbo and we try to go super fast, more wheels, try to go for that package, Notion Thief will get a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense too. And it's 3-4 size body too is nothing to snuff at.
Yeah, that 4 toughness can block a lot of stuff. Oftentimes, I think it's best to probably just not attack with Talion and just hold back her 3-4 blocker. Notion Thief can't do that.
Yeah, Notion Thief is so fragile. Yeah. All right, so that's going to get a 4. All right, let's move on to Abrupt Decay. This is a green and a black for an instant that can't be countered by spells or abilities. And it says destroy target non-land permanent with converted mana cost 3 or less.
I love this card. This is one of my favorite removal spells ever. To me, I give it as close to a 5 as we can. I would say maybe it's like a 4.8 or something, because maybe there's not every deck I want to play. But if I'm playing Golgari, I'm almost assuredly putting Abrupt Decay in.
I would give you a 5. I would say this is probably... Is this better than Deathrite Shaman? It's kind of up there right now with
like
a card that I'm not cutting from Golgari decks because it is uncounterable. There's nothing that your opponents can do, and it is going to get that stacks piece out of your way to win you the game.
Yeah, not only does it get rid of the stacks piece, like you said, very well, but it also uncounterably gets rid of the win condition. If they're trying to win the game with its great at killing Underworld Breach.
Yeah, that's a big one.
You know what I mean? It's great. It can also get a Rhystic Study or a Mystic Remora or things like that. It can hit a lot of different things, so it's very versatile. The 3 mana or less, that hits most everything in our format. Yes, there's some Talions, like we just talked about, where it's not going to hit, but most everything you're going to be able to hit with Abrupt Decay, and uncounterably, besides Deflecting Swat, not much is going to be able to really stop that Abrupt Decay.
Yeah, you will hear in your opponent's voice them be defeated as they go. That was like the one thing that could beat me.
Right. If you're on board for a 5, I think this is going just about every Golgari deck.
Oh, I'm on board for a 5. Is this better than Deathrite Shaman is my question, because I feel like they're both auto-includes in these 5-color decks. Are you not putting Abrupt Decay in 5-color decks anymore?
I don't know. Me personally, I would probably put it in every deck. I suppose I could see a world where you don't want 2-mana interaction. It's just too slow. Maybe Cody would want to cut it or something, but even then, I'm not sure if that's right. I don't know that Deathrite Shaman would ever get cut. So maybe it's just under Deathrite. I'm not sure.
I am not playing Abrupt Decay in Kenrith.
Oh my God.
And
you fool.
I feel like that's like part of it's because I am playing so many other really good
options.
Removal spells. I have so many options at 1 mana. I have so many counter spells. And I'm trying to get Kenrith out. So I have the opportunity to play things like Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swat in my list personally.
Okay, so it's under Deathrite Shaman then.
So maybe it is under Deathrite Shaman. But like very slightly.
Yeah, just barely.
Just barely, yeah. Now Assassin's Trophy is a green and a black for an instant that says destroy target, permanent, and opponent controls. Its controller may search their library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle.
Yeah, I think this one is worse than Abrupt Decay, which is weird because when it first came out, I thought it was just about as good, but the losing the uncounterability is huge. Yes, you gain that you can kill just about anything, but that doesn't really matter because Abrupt Decay can kill just about anything that you want to kill.
Yeah, so it's kind of just more important to have the uncounterability versus that extra versatility and potential downside of your opponent being in like a 2-color deck and having access to a ton of basics they could get.
Yeah, getting them a land is not nothing. That's a kind of a big downside. It's the difference between Swords to Plowshare and Path to Exile. Swords sees a ton of play and Path kind of doesn't, and I think it's for a similar reason.
And it's an untapped land too, right, which ain't nothing.
You don't need 2 of that effect a lot of the time. You don't need 2 of that. You're going to be tutoring for the Abrupt Decay when you need it, and you don't need to have a second Assassin's Trophy. Now, if certain decks are really in on wanting to control the board, Assassin's Trophy can still be good. I'm not saying it's not a good card, but I'm cutting it way before I cut Abrupt Decay.
I'm playing it in my 3-color Golgari decks, my 3 and 2-color Golgari decks, but by the time I hit 4 colors, I normally have enough interaction, right? I'm probably playing blue, so I kind of don't need it.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
Do you run it in Blood Pod?
I do run it in Blood Pod. Blood Pod wants to be a little bit more controlling. And
you're
not
in blue, yeah. So I would want to run it in Blood Pod too.
Yeah, when you're not in blue, it's a little bit better for sure because you don't have hard counter spells. You need like hard removal that can just get rid of anything. It's much stronger there. But in blue, you have Force of Will, and a lot of times that will end up being a cut for the Assassin's Trophy or something like that. So I still think it's like a 3-3.5, somewhere in that range.
I was going to go up to 4. Maybe we give it like a 3.6 or 3.7 in that case.
3.7. Let's go go 3.7.
Let's go 3.7 then, yeah. Because there are a lot of decks that it's still really good for me.
Yeah, very helpful. Basically, like you said, all non-blue decks, I think this is great. If you're in Golgari and non-blue, I think this is awesome.
All right, yeah, that sounds good to me too. Okay. Why don't we round out the Golgari section of the podcast?
Yeah, might as well.
Choline Ritual is 2... a black and a green for a sorcery that says destroy each non-land permanent with mana value 2 or less and add black or green for each permanent destroyed this way.
Oof, that mana production is huge. A lot of times you're making 10, 12, upwards of almost 20 mana with this card. It can be so, so powerful.
This card wins you the game without you realizing it. Like, it gets rid of so much and boosts you so far ahead all in one sitting. It's hard to lose after you do this.
Yeah, now not all decks can play it. A lot of decks are very permanent focused, and this is going to set you further back than it's going to set your opponents back. But if you're more spell-based, if you're more combo-based, I really, really like this card. It's one of the major pulls to playing black and green right now.
Especially if you can use the black or the green mana. Like, I had to cut it from Kenrith because I finally had a situation where I cast it, and I couldn't win the game immediately after casting it. And that was one in 100 times of actually using this card. So... like, you do really need to be set up to have, like, a lot to be able to do with those two colors of mana. The decks that do play it are able to utilize this so perfectly.
Yeah, it's so great in Atraxa because all of my tutors are green and black.
Oh,
most
yeah.
of them, you know what I mean? So I can use the extra mana that I make to go find the food chain, which I can also cast off of that green mana, and get the Eternal Scourge, which colors can also be cast from all that. So normally with Atraxa, if I can resolve this spell, I can normally find a win soon after. It also not shutting down my own Atraxa. My 7-mana commander still gets to stay there. So I think this is really strong in the decks that can play it, but not all decks can play it, so that kind of takes it down a little bit. I still think it's like a 4 or higher.
I think so too. It also is super good in your Underworld Breach decks too. Like, getting rid of your board just to be able to then cast Underworld Breach and completely build it all back up again.
Yep.
It's so powerful. I would agree. This is going to be up in the 4s. I would give this more than a 4 though, but I think that's starting to get into the personal bias territory.
I think it's a 4.5.
All right, let's give it a 4.5.
If you can play this card, then I think you definitely should. So like, if you're playing black and green and then you're also not playing heavy small creatures, like, I don't play it in Blood Pod, so if you're like a black green creature stacks control the board deck, this is not great there. But any other deck that can play this definitely should, and it's going to be one of the best cards in your deck.
Yeah, if you're looking to finish the game, I think this is something that you want. I feel like the decks like Kenrith that aren't looking to finish the game, you know, they want it to grind out a little bit more. Maybe it's not exactly where you want to go, but if you're just looking for a way to win, Choline Ritual is the way to go.
Even still though, Choline Ritual in Kenrith seems so good. You can use them 5 mana to use Kenrith to reanimate everything that you just killed.
Oh, it's probably wrong to, like, cut it. Cutting it was so probably good. Wrong because I too, like, all of my good tutors are like Finale of Devastation, Demonic Tutors. Like, it's stuff that I can do after it, but like, I found myself wanting things that couldn't use that mana after I tutored, though.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I don't know. I'm going to think about it a lot harder now.
Okay.
Mnemonic Betrayal. This is 1, a blue and a black for a sorcery that says exile all opponents' graveyards. You may cast spells from among those cards this turn, and mana of any type can be spent to cast them. At the beginning of the next end step, if any of those cards remained exiled, return them to their owner's graveyard, and then you exile Mnemonic Betrayal.
I'm going to, right off the bat, start off by saying that I do not love this card. I've said that before in the podcast. Is not one of my favorite cards. I think it can be very high powerful. The ceiling can be insane, but the fact that you have to rely on your opponent's stuff going to the graveyard brings this card back a little bit for me.
That being said, it is a one card win condition that you can put in any single Demir deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, being able to find somebody else's Underworld Breach off of their Demonic Tutor or something like that. If they have any tutor in their graveyard, you can almost assuredly piece together a win as long as you can make enough mana. The issue that I often find is, like, by the time those types of things are in the graveyard, most often my opponents have already won the game. You know what I mean? So, like, things have to go wrong for this card to be good is what it feels like to me sometimes.
I like to think of it as my backup win condition. Yeah. Like, I'm never actively trying to win the game with Mnemonic Betrayal first. It's always like, oh, my Thassa's Oracle got countered. And in those situations, there are a lot of times where, like, well, there's a couple Lotus Petals or something in the graveyard where I can help ramp me after this then too and really continue to chain a bunch of spells together. So I don't want to say it's easy to set up. It just requires a lot of brain power to do.
Yeah, and it's also very tricky over webcam. It's also extremely good with Culling Ritual, the card that we just talked about, because after you destroy everything, then you get to use your Mnemonic Trail to recast your opponent's stuff that you just destroyed. That can be really good. Realistically, I think it's probably about as strong as that card is. It's probably a 4.5. It's just, my personally, it hasn't worked out for me as many times as I see it work out for other people. A lot of times I'm looking at my hand and my opponent's got two fetch lands, nothing in their graveyard, and then it just rots in my hand and I don't ever have to do anything with it. But I understand it's good. It's still probably a 4.5.
It's funny because I've had it work out for me a ton.
Yeah.
I don't know. It takes a while to piece some of these lines together because you are using a bunch of cards that you don't know. They're not in your deck. So you're right. You are at the liberty of your opponents. And historically, we have not liked that on the Play to Win podcast.
Right. Browbeats aren't good. If your opponents get to decide how good your cards are, I mean, that's not really what's going on with this specific card because you get to choose all the modes, but it depends heavily on what your opponents have done. And yes, like Dockside is still a card. And yes, Culling Ritual, the one that we just talked about, are still cards. But those things, their opponents have to play stuff. This thing, your opponents have to play stuff and then it has to not go well for them. So like other people or you have to have already interacted a lot of the time. And yeah, whatever. But card's still good.
Let's give it a 4.4 because of that slight downside. Our next card is Eladamri's Call. This is a green and a white for an instant that lets you search your library for a creature card, reveal it, and then put it into your hand and shuffle.
Yeah, this card should see a lot more play. In the right deck, this card's insane. It has to be versatile. The reason why tutors are powerful is because they can get a whole plethora of different things. So if you can get both a win condition or interaction with this card, super, super strong.
Yeah, I feel like it works really well in like four colors. Decks that are looking for creature-based combos, but also have good creatures that can also be other interaction or just straight-up clones.
Yeah, if you're playing Neoform, a card that we already talked about, then you probably want to also be playing this if you can. Like, if you're in that Bant wheel of things, I want to say that Eladamri's Call is probably going to be the right pick for you, especially if you're in red also, if you can find Dockside off of this.
Yeah.
Format of Dockside is still really good. So if your Eladamri's Call is just sometimes a format of Dockside, that's awesome. That's going to be incredible. So there are certain decks that are really going to love this card, but you have to be playing a lot of specific things. You have to be playing green, white, and probably red, and then also probably blue because you want this to be able to sometimes find a Thassa's Oracle or something.
Yeah, ideally.
So you have to be in like 4 to 5 colors a lot of times, and then if you're in 4 to 5 colors, you're playing black tutors already. Like Demonic Tutor is a lot of times just going to be better than this. Even the instant speed doesn't matter. The Demonic Tutor is easier to cast and it can find anything that you want.
So this doesn't come up in Atraxa, right?
It lives in a tricky space. No, I don't play it in Atraxa right now, which you'd think that I would, but this can't find Food Chain. Like, yes, it can find Eternal Scourge, but it can't find Dockside either. So, like, it's not as great as I want it to be. If it's
what card do you mean besides... It can't find Dockside in your deck, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It can't find Dockside.
Oh, because it's not doing that. Yeah.
I can't find Dockside in my Atraxa deck, so that's why I'm not playing it. If I could find Dockside, I would. And if you are playing Eladamri's Call in your Atraxa deck, it's probably great for you. It probably is still going to be a powerful card. Just for me, it's not as flexible as I need my tutor in my four-color deck to be.
I feel like it's card type in Atraxa also matters a lot too. Like, normally I feel like what you want to do is take a piece of interaction and a tutor
right.
with your instant and sorcery slot on your Atraxa trigger. But if you have to forego a silence in order to take Eladamri's Call, I feel like that doesn't set you up as easy for a victory then.
But yeah, your instance, you want them to be interaction because that's what you want to take off of Atraxa. So you're definitely right about that. But there's a lot of decks that aren't Atraxa that can play this card. And it's fine. Like, it's good, like we said, but you have to be playing those specific things. And it's a little, only specific decks want this.
Your Naya decks, your Rakkos and
stuff
like that.
I think Mijila probably wants it too. If you can find Derevi, if you can find your combo or your Dockside, your mana, or you can find now Samo too, you can find the draw. Like, if you can find any of the boxes that you need to check at a moment for a CDH game, Eldarmish Call gets way better. So it's still good. It's not higher than a 4 though, definitely.
No, I think it's a 3 probably. That would put it at the Noble Hierarch range, actually.
I think it's better than Noble Hierarch.
I think it is too. And you know, it's better than Ignoble Hierarch, so it's better than 3.01 too. But it's probably worse than Notion Thief though, right?
My gut reaction is they're around the same power level. The decks that can play them in those specific decks, they're going to be fine.
They're really good in those decks.
But outside of, they're not a ballpark. They're not, I'm playing green-white, so I'll chuck it in there. That's not always the case, although it looks like it could be. But I think it's around an Ocean Thief, maybe a touch stronger.
Then Neoform is at 3.5. This is exactly where it needs to be.
I think it's a 3.5. I think it's right around where Neoform is.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Because it's going to be performing generally the same function. Because it's a little bit more flexible, we'll still line it up to be ahead of Neoform.
See, it's tricky because Neoform cheats on the mana of the creature that it gets, which is really nice. So Eladamri's Call, you still have to cast the thing that it gets. Whereas like Neoform can sneak in Grand Abolisher, and then all of a sudden your opponents thought they could interact more anymore, but they can't interact anymore.
I guess that's true, but like you also, you did put a mana investment into that other creature though too.
Yes, that's
like
true.
Like it's a card investment.
You put the mana in ahead of time rather than Eladrimus Call, you have to put it in afterwards. Where I think maybe the suspense of Neoform of like your opponents don't know what you're getting, but sorcery is much worse than instant.
That's true. And maybe your opponents not knowing what you're getting is much more threatening too.
I think it's an Avacyn's Pilgrim, Elves of Deep Shadow situation where they both have pros and cons, but they're close enough to the same thing that I think we should give them the same rating.
Well, they're getting the same rating, but I still have to know which one comes first in the lineup that I do at the bottom of the screen.
I would take Neoform. If we're drafting them, I'm picking Neoform
you're
first.
You're picking Neoform first.
It's blue
you know
card.
What?
It's a blue,
in blue.
You can pitch it to force.
It's a blue card. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great
if
point.
Anything.
Alrighty, then Lotho, Corrupt Sheriff, is a white and a black for a 2/1 legendary halfling rogue.
It's not sheriff, you're right. Actually, like you're pronouncing it not wrong there.
No,
like,
it is.
This is the one thing where it sounds like it's wrong, but it's not a sheriff, it's a sheriff.
That's totally a sheriff, yeah. Whenever a player casts their second spell each turn, you lose one life and create a treasure token.
I love Lotho.
This card is bonkers.
One of the few one toughness creatures that has been printed recently where I think it's worth it to run into Orcish Bowmaster World.
All the time.
If this makes two treasures, I'm happy. Honestly, two mana to make two treasures over the course of turns is fine. And oftentimes, this will make five treasures before it dies. And in that case, it's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of times even that Orcish Bowmaster will take priority over other things instead of Lotho, too.
This turns on your Mox Ambers, also it being a legendary creature. It can help Sisse because it's black-white pips for your Sisse deck.
Turns on your Mox Opal, speaking of Moxes, too.
Because it makes the treasures that can help turn on the Mox Opals. Yes, it sort of it absolutely can. The one damage that it deals isn't much, and whenever an opponent does blah and you get mana is something that we don't really have outside of Lotho, which makes its pick so much more desirable. Do you know what I mean? Like, if there was something better that did this better than Lotho, Lotho would get lost pretty quickly. But there is nothing like this that makes mana at this rate besides Smothering Tithe.
And Monologue Tax.
Yeah, but, besides bad cards.
But yeah, but like Monologue Tax is 3 mana and doesn't have a Timna attacking body attached to it. No, Lotho is a advantage engine for 2 mana, which we don't want to turn up in this format.
We don't want to turn down. We do want them to turn up.
But he'll definitely turn up.
Yeah, he'll be turning up for sure.
This is the best card we've talked about, though, right?
Best?
Yeah, it's better than Deathrite Shaman, Abrupt Decay, Calling Ritual.
I don't know. Is that true?
Yeah, totally, dude.
Oh, jeez.
Dude, the ceiling
I
on this
that.
Card is so high, you can trigger it yourself, right?
You can trigger it yourself.
You go
is
Lotho,
huge.
Then cast Mox Amber. All of a sudden, your Lotho was fucking free.
Yes, that is very true. In the best decks, I think it's great, which is something that can be said over Deathrite Shaman. Deathrite Shaman is a great card in bad decks. No offense. Sorry, just that's how it is.
You're absolutely right. And in good decks, it's a bad card.
Yeah, whereas Lotho is a great card in great decks. That's probably true, right? In like Blue Farm, this is, Lotho is probably awesome in Blue Farm.
And honestly, it would take bad decks and turn them good because now you have another way
is
to make the mana.
This goes in every deck?
Yeah. What black-white deck are you not playing Lotho in?
I don't know. There's gotta
be some,
though.
I dare you to tell me one.
I'm playing it in both my black-white decks, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I want, which is make mana.
Again, my whole Kenrith list is like built around trying to play around one damage pingers as best as I can, but there's 3 cards that are just too good to not play, and Lotho is one of them.
It's like, funny, we were just talking about 2-mana mana dorks that have 1 toughness and why they're bad, right? And now we're bringing up this one, which is literally that. But this is so much better.
All the 2-mana mana dorks that we've talked about before have to tap. So you have to go around the table to not get any advantage. Like, a lot of times they played something else and then played the removal spell, so you're still getting the Lotho trigger.
Yeah, the fact that Lotho can guarantee make the mana before it dies, you can play into it. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a 5.
I think it's totally a 5. Yeah, okay. Better than Deathrite Shaman.
It feels weird to say out loud because it's such a new card and it wasn't like the highest pick from the Lord of the Rings set, but it's so crazy how Lord of the Rings gave us at least 3 5-out-of-5s and several other cards that are very powerful in CDH. Isn't that wild?
It was some people's top pick for Lord
true.
Of the Rings, which I think is a little ludicrous because the One Ring was in that set.
Yeah, and it's still nowhere near as good as the One Ring.
Nowhere near as good as the One Ring. Yeah.
It's so crazy how depthy the rating of 5 is. Like a five can be a Deathrite Shaman or the One Ring. That feels wrong and crazy if we
it
say it
does
out loud,
feel very wrong.
Because both those cards are super different.
How flawed is our system?
Very flawed. We have to make a new system. But Lotho's good. Either way, Lotho's good. If you're playing black and white, you have to be in a pretty crazy situation to not want to play that card, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Fire Covenant is our next card. This is one, a black and a red for an instant that says this is an additional cost to play this card. You pay X life. And Fire Covenant deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures.
This was one of my favorite cards when I first started getting into CDH. This is such a cool pull because you basically had instant speed, 3-mana Plague Wind available to you
Regeki.
In the format.
This is fucking Regeki.
Yeah. Most often this is going to be 3-mana, instant speed, destroy all of your opponent's creatures or all the ones that you care about. So powerful.
It has always fought with the ad nauseum strategy because, like, I never really wanted to play this in my ad nauseum decks, but there's so many boards. Like, right now, I feel like it's a little bit underplayed because even, like, in Kenrith, there's so many boards where I need to get rid of so much, and Kenrith having the ability to gain my life back, why am I not playing this card?
Yeah, I completely agree. And even in those ad nauseum decks, like, yes, you might have to pay a lot of life to kill some things so that you can ad nauseum, but, like, what's the alternative? You have something in your hand that doesn't kill all that stuff, and then you can't win the game.
You just lose the game, yeah.
The alternative of not having, like, yes, it doesn't work great with ad nauseum, but the alternative of looking at one Go for the Throat in your hand when you have a Deathrite Shaman and you're looking at Underworld Breach and you have a Dothi Voidwalker and you have an Opposition Agent where, like, if you wanted to instead pay the, what are the three cards?
That's like
seven
life.
Six
yes.
or seven life or whatever. And you go from 35 to 28. And yeah, your ad nauseum is a little bit better. But now you can win the game. You have an option to win the game. Whereas before, what were you doing with that extra life? Nothing. Because you couldn't win through that shit. So, like, yes, I get it that it competes with ad nauseum, but I think it's a necessary evil. You must play something that can get rid of multiple things.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah, and having it available at 3-mana and at instant speed is so powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a very underplayed card. If you were to ask me what's the most underplayed card in CDH, this would probably be it.
Probably Fire Covenant, yeah.
I personally think it's in the same world of the Mnemonic Betrayal, the Culling Rituals, those type of effects, those multicolor big beaters. I think this is right in those power levels, maybe just under Culling Ritual.
Then we're going to give it a 4.3 because I'm also thinking it's a little bit worse than Mnemonic Betrayal.
Just under, though.
Just under, yeah. So, Culling Rituals 4.5, Betrayal's 4.4, Covenant will be 4.3.
Yeah, and for me personally, I like Fire Covenant before both of those cards that we just mentioned, but I also understand that it is objectively weaker because it can't create a win in the same way, but in a very similar way it can.
In a very similar way, it opens the opportunity for you to win, but Culling Ritual and Mnemonic Betrayal help you facilitate the win after they've resolved, whereas once this resolved, now you're in the situation you're in. If you can't capitalize off of it, then you're lowercase.
Yes, sure.
All right, we have one more card to talk about.
One more already? That's it? That's the whole list?
There's not so many.
I'm going to get my book after this, and there's going to be more we got to talk about.
This time, I can dare you, because there's so many fewer multicolor cards that are seeing play, because there's not many multicolor cards that are 1 mana.
And that's what you need.
Right? So much of efficiency is trying to be short on mana. So when you have so many color pip requirements going into these cards, they better do something really good.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, what's our last card?
Teferi Time Raveler. This is one, a blue and a white, for a Planeswalker Teferi that has 4 loyalty. It has a static ability that says each opponent can cast spells only anytime they can cast a sorcery. You can plus one of them to have until your next turn. You may cast sorcery spells as though they had flash. And its -3 says return up to 1 target artifact, creature, or enchantment to its owner's hand and draw.
This is a card that I feel like came full circle in CDH. When it first got printed, everyone loved it. It was like, this is another Granite Boster. And then we quickly realized, wait a minute, if I pass turn with this fucking thing, I protect somebody else's win. Let's get this out of my deck immediately. And then we learned, wait a minute, if I have Displacer Kitten and Sol Ring in my deck, we got a win right there on the table. Because with Displacer Kitten and Sol Ring, or any mana positive rock and Teferi, you can create a loop where you draw through your entire deck with those three cards. Should I explain that?
I want to.
Okay, you go ahead.
All right, so with Displacer Kitten and Teferi in play, you can cast your Sol Ring, and then that will blink your Teferi. Teferi will come back into play with 4 loyalty, and you can minus Teferi to blink your Sol Ring back to your hand after you've tapped it for 2 mana. This will allow you to draw a card. You then recast the Sol Ring with the mana that you floated, triggering your Displacer Kitten to then flicker your Teferi to have it re-enter the battlefield with 4 loyalty. You can see the scenario we set up as you continue through that loop. You can draw, what is it, 70 cards that you'll have left in your library or something?
Your whole deck, yeah, your whole deck.
That will give you the rest of the rocks you need to make all the colors of mana you need to fling out your Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's great, and because it's part of a three-card combo, which normally aren't good, but your Sol Ring, you're already playing, so that's basically, you don't have to worry about putting an extra card in your deck. And Displacer Kitten, it can also help protect your creatures from spot removal and stuff like that. Displacer Kitten can be an incredible card. I know specifically in Atraxa, Displacer Kitten is already, like, mind-blowingly powerful, because blinking your Atraxa, your opponents are just so fucking dead if you can get that going. And then having it also overlap with the Teferi can be really great. It's just important to remember with Teferi, you can't cast it and pass a turn. It's not like 60-card formats where you can just cast it, bounce something, draw a card, pass. Don't do that. It is specifically a win condition or a silence on a stick. You have to use it as either of those two things. And if you do, this card can be really great.
Love it in Sissei. I feel like you can just, you just get it into play uncounterably without people knowing what you're going for.
And then especially with Sissei, instant speed getting into play. If someone's trying to go through a loop where they have to be responding to shit, no, you can't do that anymore with Teferi out.
As long as they're the player before you.
Right. Yes, as long as they're the player before you. Exactly. I think this one's high, but because it doesn't go in every blue deck and it kind of has to be part of that combo, are there other combos with Teferi and Sol Ring that I'm not thinking of?
I don't think so.
Kitten?
No, it's mainly the Displacer Kitten line. There are blue farm lists that are playing Teferi. Yeah.
And I think it's great in those lists. I think it's really awesome. If you're playing it as part of a three card combo that can, like I said, I already said this shit, but if you're playing it as part of a combo that can also help protect your shit and then also help have other value like blinking Dockside, it can be a great include in the deck.
Yeah, I definitely agree. What do we give it?
Maybe it's around Culling Ritual. It's in that same ballpark, that family of two color cards that can help win the game. They're super powerful, but they don't go in every single deck. But the ones they do, they are very, very strong in. So maybe 4.2 to 6, somewhere in there.
But I think that it's a little bit worse than Culling Ritual.
I think so too. I think it's just under Culling Ritual, but it's right up there.
Yeah, I think the inherent risk of not being able to pass the turn after you do this is a downside. For the same reasons that we don't like Defense Grid, we won't like Teferi Time Raveler, but Teferi Time Raveler does have that hope you win the game upside, but unlike Mnemonic Betrayal and Culling Ritual, like, it doesn't, I guess it does kind of help push you a little bit farther, because you, it does help you draw cards, but, like, it itself then won't help you cast Displacer Kitten or anything else after it.
Yeah, I agree. But it's so hard because realistically, I think it's right around those. I personally think it's, yeah, it's probably worse than Mnemonic Betrayal. It's probably a 4.2, but I like it more.
We're going to give it a 4.2.
We'll give it a 4.2, but I like it more.
That sounds great. I feel like this whole list is like Dylan getting disappointed because Cam likes these cards more than he does.
I got to check my book. What about Lavinia? We don't want to talk about Lavinia?
She doesn't see play anywhere.
She doesn't see play anywhere. Blue Farm used to play her a little bit. Blade Historian, great Winota card. Witherbloom Apprentice. That's one we should talk about.
Oh, we should talk about Witherbloom Apprentice. About Witherbloom that might Apprentice. Be worth it. Yeah.
There is a lot, though, that we... Yeah.
There's a lot of junk, though. There's a lot of junk.
Let's talk about this one real quick.
All right, Witherbloom Apprentice. Yeah, this is a green and a black for a human druid 2/2 with Magecraft. It says, whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, each opponent loses one life and you gain a life.
This is a combo with Chain of Smog.
Correct.
Four mana, ditch your hand, lose the game, weak two, spot removal.
But it's still a great way for Golgari-based decks to win the game if you're not playing blue.
Yeah, if you're in Golgari, and basically, like, just Golgari or maybe, like, Abzan, I think this is a fine win condition.
If you're in Jund, I think this is a fine
win condition. If you're in Jund, this is fine. If you want to, yeah, I think this is fine in Jund.
If you're in Sans Blue, I think this is a fine win condition.
Once you have access to Thoracle, take this card out of your deck. Because discarding your hand sucks. But if you're in not blue, I think this is fine. Because a lot of your protection, myth, you cast Silence beforehand, so you don't care that you discard your hand. So I think this card can be great in those types of decks.
What do we give it, though? Because it is like a Thoracle where it doesn't do anything, but it's not like running the format the
way
that
Thoracle
does.
What do we give Dualcaster Mage? We didn't talk about it, did we? It's the same power level as Dualcaster Mage is, I think. A little bit worse.
It's a little bit worse than Dualcaster Mage. What would you give Dualcaster Mage today?
Like a 3.5. So maybe it's like a 3.2.
Okay.
We don't want to talk about Archon of Valor's Reach or Flamescroll Celebrant, Luris, Lord Drakus, Memory's Journey. Those are all bad. Limdul's Vault? I kind of don't
Limdul's
like this
Vault
anymore.
Doesn't really play. Is he playing
Biomancer's now? Familiar. Whispering Madness. Fiend Artisan. That's a good one. Dovin's Veto. Everyone loves Dovin's Veto. That card also sucks. Orcish Lumberjack? Only very specific decks are playing
that. That's a two. That card's a two.
Yeah, Tinderwall. Tinderwall's good.
Tinderwall's pretty good. Tinderwall doesn't see as much play as it used to.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, okay, maybe the other cards suck.
Yeah, all the other cards suck. Do you want to hear the list?
I would love to.
All right, so at the bottom, we have Elves of Deep Shadow. Oh, we put that under Avacyn's Pilgrim. Okay. Then Avacyn's Pogrom. They both got 2.7s. Then we have Noble Hierarch coming in at a 3. Then we have Ignoble Hierarch coming in at a 3.01. Witherbloom Apprentice comes in here at a 3.2. Notion Thief comes in at a 3.4. Eladamri's Call came in at a 3.5. So did Neoform. That came next, followed by Assassin's Trophy at 3.7. Then Talion got a 4. Teferi Time Raveler got a 4.2. Fire Covenant got a 4.3. Mnemonic Betrayal finished out with a 4.4. Then came Calling Ritual with 4.5. Abrupt Decay got a 5. So did Deathrite Shaman. But our best multicolor spell was Lotho, also coming in at 5.
Yeah, this does not match my favorite multicolor cards in CDH, but I think we're probably right in that this is the order of the most powerful cards in CDH. It's difficult to rank because Lotho's ceiling is kind of low compared to some of the other cards we talked about, but its floor is so high. That
I can't wait until they print Hytho. I think Hytho is going to be such a good card. Hytho is going to be
great. Yeah, I completely agree. Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Justin Heck, Kajo Alex, Shun in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, the Git Rock player, So Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rasgrees, Uncle Butch, Nick Foles, Goat09, Kwaja Ihamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com. You see like tie-dye multicolored? See what I'm doing? See what everyone else is seeing with the color I'm trying to match the shirt with the theme? See what I'm doing?
Have you been doing that this whole time?
I've been doing it for a while now.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use our affiliate link and code PLAYTOWIN5 for 5% off your order.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Jacob Bowler, Luca Bressel, Big Mike, Nicholas Boulder, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mawcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Ballou, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Thanks, y'all.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that is your part.
Yeah,
I'm jumping in.
Cutting me off?
What is this, 2023? What the fuck?
Do you want to do it again?
Yeah, let's take it from the top.